Good morning, everybody. It's been a long time. If you don't remember who I am Annette Wittenberger. I'm the host of the Truths We Hide podcast. And like I said, it's been a long time, but I'm really honored to be here today with a guest that I virtually knew for a few years. Then I got to meet her in person and then I got to see her again. And so it's been super amazing to see her evolve as a person, as a woman, and to see how much inspiration she provides to other people. So I'm really excited to have you meet the Honorable Cheryl Mason. If you don't know her, connect with her on LinkedIn, but we will get into all of that as we progress through this conversation. So hang on tight and let's bring her in just a minute. Here we go. Hello. How are you today?
I am good. Hello. It's great to see you.
You too. So I just wanted to really quick say how much it meant to me when we first connected on LinkedIn. You were such a big supporter when I was writing my book. And then for you to actually come to my very first book signing when I was in the DC area, that meant so much to me, because to me, you were just like this amazing, well, you still are, this amazing woman to take time to come over to little old me in a little cafe trying to promote her book. So I just wanted to tell you that I have never forgotten that moment, and I've appreciated it ever since. And every time I talk to my friends, I'm like, you don't even know like what she did for me that day. So just thank you so much.
Well, thank you. But I couldn't not come. I mean, your book is amazing, just as you are. And I was like, no, I have to go meet this woman and talk to her. And so that's just who I am. Some people like this viewpoint of, oh, you're this big, you know, that's not who I am.
And that's the one thing I truly appreciate you, because there are a lot of people who are not like that. But then to meet people like you who do that just wants to make me a better person. And that's the kind of people I love to surround myself with, is to not forget where you came from, not forget who you are, no matter what title rank you hold, you're still a person underneath all that. And I really do appreciate who you are above all that. So thank you so much, Honorable Cheryl Mason. She's also
please call me Sherry.
Sherry. And I mean, so you're a soon to be author. You're a foremost CEO and first woman and military spouse, chairman of the Board of Veterans Appeals in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Mouthful, but huge role. And now you're the chief catalyst at Catalyst Management, our leadership management. So I want to talk about imposter syndrome today. I want to talk about adversity. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your background after I just said all those things?
Well, I think you covered it. I mean, that's me in a nutshell. I mean, basically, you know, we were talking about our roots and not forgetting where you come from. That's very important to me. I grew up in Appalachia in southern Ohio, and I was a suicide loss survivor. I lost my father and my brother to suicide before I was 18. And so that was a really rough time, because people didn't understand, and they, you know, you disappeared if you allowed them to let you disappear. My mother would have none of that. So, which probably explains much of me. But then I jumped from that into the military spouse world. I call it the frying pan from to the fire. The time I became a military spouse, the military spouse world was still in the 50s and the 60s, where you weren't supposed to work. You were supposed to volunteer, support your spouse. And, you know, I was just didn't fit that mold. So again, they tried to make me invisible. It didn't work. So I just continued pushing. And, you know, as I went along and tried to find my way, I figured out finally, through a lot of, adversity and imposter, you know, gremlins, you know, figuring out where I needed to be and what my purpose, impact, and value was and is, because it really has remained much the same. I'm really about making a difference to people. I believe that, like you said, You know, you have to be genuine. You have to be real. People matter. And, you know, employees are people, customers are people, stakeholders are people. They all matter. And that's, you know, that was really my philosophy. And so I did that as chairman and seemed to have some success at it for 5 years in that final role at VA. And then, you know, when I retired, I decided to keep my platform of purpose, impact, and value and go into Catalyst Leadership, which is a launch about consulting. I do a lot of consulting work around leadership as well as government consulting, and primarily now working on the book. This is my full-time thing.
Right. No, that's first of all, I'm very sorry to hear about your brother and your father. It's very difficult, very mm-hmm. difficult. And you seem like you have just risen above and just continue to move forward. And I know that's very difficult as well. I want to know how. So let's talk about the book really quick. Why did you want to write that book? Because it's not easy for everybody. We were talking about a little bit about that before. It's fun, but it's stressful. So why did you decide to write it?
So it really became more about that. I wanted to write it. It was more about I had to write it. After I retired, a lot of people were asking me what I was going to do, and I was trying to figure it out. And several people who knew my story said, "You really need to write a book." And I was like, I don't know anything about writing a book. And they said, "No, you have to tell your story because you overcame so much. And then you didn't let anybody put you in the box. And then when you stepped into leadership roles, you impacted and you drove change." And so they said, "You have to tell that story." So that's really what happened. And then as I looked around the world around me, especially post-COVID, you know, people view a lot of things differently, but primarily life. You know, work is work and life is life, but work is not life. And life is not work. You know, work is a part of life, but understanding that and understanding how that plays out as a leader, as an employee, as a person, and especially with the generation of millennials and Gen Zs who are phenomenal coming along behind us, I really felt that they need to understand that there was a lot they're going to face as future leaders, and some are current leaders. That they needed to hear from someone who had faced those challenges and led my way.
I love that so much. And I can understand the point about saying you needed to write it. And I love that you did that, because you never know who you're going to impact just by the words that you put on that paper. So I'm so excited. I'm so excited to see that. I'm so excited to see that you've just done so much and this is coming out. So congratulations early. Can you tell us, why do you think some or most of us suffer from imposter syndrome? And what does that mean to you? What do you think it means?
Well, for me, and I define this in the book, it's really feeling like you don't measure up, like you're not good enough, like you don't have the skills, that you're not what you're supposed to be for the position. So that's really what I believe imposter syndrome is. And quite frankly, it's fear. It's based in fear. It's based in our lack of, you know, I don't want to say a full lack of self-confidence, but it's that you are like, "Well, I could never do that." And it's like, yes, you can. You know, people talk to me about that all the time about speaking, and they're like, "I don't know how you do that. I don't know." You know, I'm like, look, you know, in public speaking class in college, I was scared of my shadow. Okay. So it's, you know, so I think that's the first thing, is understanding that we have it because we're measuring ourselves by someone else's yardstick. Okay. That's really what it comes down to. And because of my life as a child, with my father dying when I was 4 and my brother when I was 17, my mom taught me, I had an amazing mother, just the original badass, if I can call her that. And she would not, She would not allow me, first of all, to hide. And second of all, one of the things she taught me very early was you never let anybody else judge you. You don't let anybody else put your measurement together. You decide what your measurement's going to be. You define that. And so, you know, that's kind of how I came at life. And so when, you know, we all have imposter syndromes, I get those little gremlins sitting on my shoulder, especially, you know, stepping into the role I was in and everything else. But even writing a book, they're like, you don't know what you're doing. What are you thinking? What, you know, and it's like, go back to your cage.
Right.
So I don't know that I would call it overcoming. I struggle with this in the book because I'm like, I don't know that I call it overcoming. I think it's more of managing and handling it. They're there. You understand that they're there, but acknowledging that they're there and then saying, no, you know, I get to decide. This is me. And other people don't get to impact, and neither do you. I get to decide. So understanding who you are and developing who you are is key. And I mean, you're doing that. You're amazing. Congratulations on the new role with the magazine, by the way, with the editorial job. It's so exciting.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. And the fact that you honestly said you still struggle with it. And it's hard for us to admit that. I still struggle with it a lot, and I even have to disconnect from social media because I'll get to that point where I'm like, well, how come she won that award? I'm working just as hard as she is. But then I believe in God, and I have to bring myself back down and remind myself that God will put me in the position that is meant for me. If it's meant to be, it'll come. I have to continuously do that because I do. I get so like so frustrated, like, well, how come not me? And it's not about that. And it's a struggle. It's a struggle. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. I also appreciate what you feel it means. And gosh, your mom, seriously, after all that she went through to continue to be that badass for you and then for you to continue her legacy is just that just touches my heart so much.
Yeah. I stand on her shoulders. I mean, quite frankly, you know, she was a World War II Rosie the Riveter type, you know, but for her, I would not be where I am.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Good job, Mom. That's amazing. can you talk to us a little bit about what types of adversity have you faced that has shaped you into, I mean, I know there might be a lot. What can you tell us a little bit about that? And then how has that shaped you into you who you are now?
Okay. Well, first I want to say, you know, we all face adversity and obstacles and challenges, whatever you want to call them, hurdles. It's called life. And you know that. I mean, I love your wild ride called life. That's perfect. I mean, we all have them. Everybody, you know, nobody's is worse than anybody else's. It's just hard. And so, you know, what I really faced is I faced a lot of discrimination. As in childhood, I was excluded because I was different because my father passed and I was different. You know, in the late 60s, early 70s, people didn't understand mental health and those challenges. And then, you know, I was just different. And so, you know, when I went to law school, I was different because I went to two law schools. And then I get to be, you know, as a military spouse, I was different because I wanted a career. And so people tried to continually exclude me, put me in a box, try to contain me. So there was a lot of that. And I was like, nope, we're not. You know, you can do whatever you want, but that's not who I am. I mean, even when I became a lawyer and tried to find my first job outside law school, I mean, the lawyer profession discriminated against me because I was a military spouse, right? So we all face it, and it's just a situation of how you view it. And again, I think part of this goes back to my childhood and how I was raised and what I came to understand that if I let others put me in a box or contain me or try to dictate my life, then, you know, it wasn't going to be my life. I wasn't going to be who I was meant to be able to do what I was meant to be, do. And, you know, like you, I too believe in God. And I think, you know, that there's, I'm here for a purpose. I'm here to do something, and it's up to him, whatever that is. He puts me in positions, he puts me in places, things happen. It's, you know, and so those adversities really, and people say this, you know, adversity is an opportunity. And I really viewed it as, or came to view it eventually as a catalyst. And that's where the meaning of my business comes from, catalyst leadership. Those adversities became catalysts for me to drive forward and learn and grow and manage how you deal with that. Because everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has failures. That's part of learning and growing and leading. That's just, it doesn't matter. No matter what you're, where you sit as a leader, you know, whether you're positional or you're just impacting as a leader, you're going to have mistakes and failures. And instead of, you know, crawling up in a ball and hiding from it, you need to grab hold of them and go, okay, you know, what can I learn from this? Where do I go? And how do I use this to propel me forward?
That's really powerful. I hate that you went through that, but to see what you've done with it is even more powerful. And I was listening to you speak and I was thinking, gosh, I think that's one of the reasons why I lasted as long as I did in the military. One was because my father didn't believe women should be in the military. It was like, watch me. And so I was really stubborn and I continued on. And even through deployments, my mom would question, well, why are you going? You're a mom. You shouldn't be deploying. I was like, Mom, this is what we do. Well, can I call your boss? I was like, no.
No, you cannot.
I had to continually feel like I had to prove myself as a female, as a mom, as a leader in the military. And I just, and people will look at me different, like, how can you leave your kids? How can you do that? How can you be dual military? You should be at home. And I was just, it just made me angry and to do that. And even as a Hispanic female, people didn't realize that there was more than just the Mexican race. There was Peruvian. There's, you know what I mean?
So no, there's all different parts.
And I felt that as a child. So as I grew up, I was like, no, I'm Peruvian. And it was just hard. But yes, I just felt like what am I going to do with that? You know, how am I going to continue on in life and teach my kids and do all that? So it's just, but yeah, we face so many different types of adversity, but I think you're right. Is what are we going to do with that? Right. And even with my own mental health struggles, you know, what am I going to do with that? I'm going to talk about it so that I can help other people. And I love how the world is starting to evolve and starting to open up more. And yeah, so I could talk about that all day, but yes on all of it. So, I'm curious, what was the experience like working at the VA appeals department? Because I've heard so many different stories, both good and bad, about ratings and it's not fair and I deserve this. How do you process all that? What did you have to do?
You learn to stop beating your head against the wall a lot. And yeah, so I started at the board as a very young attorney, about a couple years after law school, when we get to DC, and then, you know, learned, and I love the work. I just thought it was engaging, exciting. It really spoke to me as a beneficiary, of benefits, as well as, you know, with a psychology degree and a law degree, I kind of understood how it came together. And so I really felt that we made an impact. And, you know, when I returned and I continued to do that, the struggle really that I found as a leader and then in the chairman position, especially with appeals, is, you know, the challenge is that when people file claims, the process of filing claims and all that information, unfortunately, is not looked at correctly. It's really the problem. I mean, quite frankly, the board would not have half the work they had if VBA did what they were supposed to be doing. And I feel strongly about this. I mean, I talked about it internal department when I was there, you know, the previous undersecretary and I talked a lot about it. And I'm, you know, It's for a number of reasons. One, the caseload is huge, right? I mean, I think they're up to almost 2 million claims now. But the other problem is, you know, the workforce to understand the complexity of those claims is really hard in the training. And sometimes they have some turnover in certain areas. It's not consistent. That's the other thing you see. And so what happens is, you know, there's a perception that it's all wrong, right? And so you get even more appeals than you would normally get if it was just, you know, these things. But quite frankly, I mean, when I first started, you know, right before I became chairman, I mean, before we fully introduced appeals modernization, we saw, the board saw about, I don't know, 13, maybe even it was kind of growing up to about 15% of the initial claims that came in the door to BBA got appealed. Well, appeals modernization was supposed to help that. It didn't. By the time I left, the number was growing considerably. We were seeing even more. And that should not be happening. And so that's very frustrating. I mean, the big thing about the work I did in whatever position I held at the board is, as an attorney, as a judge, as a chief judge, as a deputy, as the chairman, I really felt like the team together, you know, I made a difference and together we made a difference to those veterans we served. And that was really what kept us going and what kept me going and helped me kind of encourage my team and support my team and care for my team, was we were impacting and making a difference to those veterans and those families. But it is hard. And I know, quite frankly, I mean, even at the board, it's not perfect. The judges aren't consistent. Each of the judges has, the judges get their discretion from the secretary. The judges are the designees of secretary to decide appeals. So they technically work for the secretary. The chairman manages them and manages the workload and the budget. But they work for the secretary. That's where their authority comes from. And so they have their own discretion. And so, you know, you look at the law, and if a case is wrong against the law, there's something you can do about it. But if it's not the way you would have decided it, well, that's called judicial discretion. And that's why the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims exists, quite frankly. But that's a whole other ball of wax you really don't want me to get into.
I honestly can't imagine. I know so much goes to all of that. And for you, and I appreciate what you do for us, or what you did for us. It's not easy. I know. And we're going to continue to see that. And, you know, a bunch of veterans are still trying to raise their percentage and all that. It's just a process, and it sucks. It just sucks.
And the best thing they can do is just make sure they have all the evidence together and submitted. You know, I mean, I think the most important thing is to make sure, you know, they understand, like, where, if there's a connection needed to connect something to service, what that looks like, or if they have the evidence, whether it's medical evidence or whether it's statements from themselves or their families to support those. Those are really important. And those are things I spoke about as chairman, and I still do, that, you know, making sure that you have that evidence and you get that evidence developed and get it in is really, really important.
Absolutely. And I think we do forget about that. We just file it hoping that it's going to work, when really they're like, this is all we have to go on. We need more. So I get it. Still, it's difficult, but yeah, thank you for sharing all of that. Can you tell people, so can you remind us again what your business offers and how people can find you?
So Catalyst Leadership Management is, it's a little diverse. It's a little all over the place right now, but it's primarily about consulting and speaking. That I do consulting on both leadership. I do training and consulting on leadership, as well as VA information. I do not represent veterans before the department. I consult kind of about who and what VA is and how they work, as well as other agencies that I know about. And then speaking. So one of the things I did as chairman, which I loved, and my husband still finds it entertaining, is that I loved public speaking. I like, especially because he knew that college student who was afraid of her shadow. But I really like speaking. And so I'd like to get back out to engaging in speaking activities. And so that's part of what the website is also about, is that I can be retained as a speaker for different events. I already have some bookings for next year. And, so whether it's training, whether it's conferences, whether it's, you know, a keynote, those are all options. So that is what Catalyst Leadership is about. And I do, like I said, provide consulting around leadership. So if an organization wants to find out more, and yes, you threw up my website there. You're ahead of me. So that's how you get in touch with me, or you can always follow me on LinkedIn. The website is also connected with my LinkedIn page. So
I love that. Is that where we can pre-order your book as well?
Yes, currently you can. Yes, the book is part of that. The book is currently in process. We're finalizing everything with revisions and all that. It can be, you can sign up on the list to be part of the pre-order group. The pre-sale ended in October. And so if you sign up on the list, then I'll make sure I have you in my community, and you'll get emails from me when the book comes out or other stuff happens. And so you can sign up there to get a copy of the book. And then the book will be available on Amazon when it comes out in probably end of March.
That's exciting. Thank you so much for being on here, for taking the time to share with us about your experiences and your book. And again, I truly appreciate you.
And I appreciate you. And thank you for all you're doing. I appreciate that you share your stories and that, you know, and I'm excited to see what you do with your new position, because I'm a big fan girl of you. So
much. Aw, well, thank you again. And go find her here and connect with her on LinkedIn and all the things. And we will see you soon.
Okay. Thanks. And have a great day. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Same to you. Bye.
Bye. Thanks.